Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is Six Rings.
The dynasty continues.
And football things.
The X, the Z, vertical routes.
I love football, man.
With your host, Andy Hart.
Andy Hart is a football genius.
I'm not going to pretend I sit down and watch the All 22.
Next question, Andy Hart, please.
Nick Fitzy Stevens.
Is that Fitzy with you this morning?
Absolutely not, Fitzy.
This just in, I'm dead inside.
And Chris Schein.
Derek Carr, however, is a guy I would ride tonight.
I think Matt Patricia's a boob.
Back to the Six Rings podcast. I'm Andy Hart, and we are coming off, yes, a Patriots victory. Finally, the Patriots have a win for about the first time, and I'm going to say, and this may be extreme, and Fitzy may be pushing back, first time in about 8 months, I think Patriot Nation feels pretty good.
As a matter of fact, Andy, as we noted on the Six Rings postgame show Sunday, that was the first dub, not of 2022, because they did defeat the Jacksonville Jaguars and interim coach Daryl Bevel back on January 2nd. So it had been 259 days since they had last experienced the sweet taste of victory.
Ugh. Anyway, 17-14 win at Acrisure. Sure, I'll call it that. I'd
Good
prefer
job.
To call it Heinz Field, but it's Acrisure. Patriots beat Mitch Trubisky, Mike Tomlin, and the Steelers, who were a lot like them. A borderline playoff team a year ago that got their doors blown off when they actually were in the postseason. Now the Steelers are in the transitional post Hall of Fame QB era, much like the Patriots are, just a little bit ahead of them in the pace. And Chris Schein, we are going to do something that I know you're going to love at least one aspect of, but I texted you guys earlier as we were doing a little show prep, and I said I wanted each of us to present a big picture, long-term, positive and negative takeaway from the Patriots' win in Pittsburgh to pull to 1-1 on the young season. And I'm going to start things off, and I am going to be positive. I think. I'm going to stick with the offensive side of the football, where we know we've been talking offense for forever. Foxborough forever, it seems like. Josh McDaniels left, and all we've talked about is personnel and coaching. And I deemed one aspect of the offense a house of cards in the offseason. And then last week, and in the end of the preseason, I said, well, maybe I was premature. Maybe they're not even a house of cards. Good news is, ladies and gentlemen, the offensive line is back to house of cards status. The five starters, including Trent Brown, Cole Strange, who our friend Fitzy posted a story that was a little overly gushing about on WEEI.com, but that Cole Strange is good. He's coming off a good game.
I wouldn't want you to say something nice about it. Thank you so much.
The offensive line and the ground game has stamped themselves as what I think we all hoped they might be, and that's the foundation upon which the offense can build. I'm not saying it's good enough. I'm not, you know, jumping on any freaking duck boat or Fitzy tour bus here. I'm just telling you, after week one, I was wondering what the hell the offense was going to do, whether it was throw, run, protect, offensive line. I was questioning everything. A week later, I saw a five-man offensive line that admittedly went back to some of their more traditional run plays at times. I don't really care. Scheme it however the F you want to scheme it. Just get five guys out there that block and use Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson, who had about $120 between them. They're averaging 5 yards a carry, basically. You now have a foundation to build upon, and that's your offensive line and your two-headed running back attack. Positive,
you have gotten some very good guard play, not only out of Cole Strange, who I made a point of putting a piece out there about, because it's fun for the Belichick can't draft crowd and all of us who may need to be given a sliver, if not a full slice of humble pie, because we decried it as the worst pick of this year's draft, or potentially the most controversial one of the Belichick era. So far, kid's grading out pretty good, and he did a nice job against Cam Hayward on Sunday, though he didn't see him every rep. He still did a nice job, especially on that running back closer by committee drive. Andy, I'd like to yes and you here and give you some props on that. I agree. The run game and the offensive line have been the biggest strength thus far. I got this from Mark Daniels a little while ago. Mac Jones has been sacked 2.99% of his dropbacks, fourth best mark in the NFL so far. It is a small sample size, only through two games. So that's not bad, all things considered, even though he seems at times to still move about as if like he's kind of harried or doesn't know exactly where he always wants to go with the ball. But there's no denying the fact that it's the offensive line and just the run game in general. We were saying closer by committee, that's a death knell in baseball. If you have multiple closers, you have no closers. The way that those guys ran decisively and with power, following their blocks and hitting the holes for first down Sunday, that's damn near the sexiest thing you're going to see probably out of this offense for a long time, Pats fans. And you know what? I appreciated it. I enjoyed it personally.
Okay, yeah. Chris Scheim, I need a pot, not a negative. We'll get to the negatives.
I just want to mention on the offensive line, I think they were pretty good against the Steelers. I will give them pretty good. I'm able to say that. Pretty good. Smile. I still think it was a bad pick, but that's a philosophy thing, so we'll save it for another day.
Well, that
performance versus Steelers.
In that argument, because I don't remember people saying Cole Strange couldn't play.
Yeah.
I believe the criticism was he was taken three rounds too early or two rounds too early. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember everybody said this guy's probably going to be a good NFL guard. He's got all the attributes. Yep.
Well, and it was also creating the need by dealing away Shaq Mason, and how many other things from defensive end or especially wide receiver, cornerback, did we think the Patriots needed at that time?
Still do. But anyway, go ahead. Chris Scheim, give me a positive, baby.
Offensive line was pretty good against the Steelers. Two thumbs up. Good job. My positive is that Nelson Agholor might be worth the money. I mean, if he's going to play like he played against Pittsburgh, Nelson Agholor becomes worth the money. I know, right? That catch.
Wow, what a refreshing. Wow, it's almost like I just bit into like a big piece of mint gum that had a fruit center. I got
that
like
46
weight refreshment there.
That 46-yard catch he made was not a great throw by Mac. It was underthrown, and a different cornerback might have broken it up. But you want to know what Nelson Agholor did? He said, I don't care. Reached over the cornerback, snagged it out of the air, and took it to the house. And to Nelson Agholor, I tip my hat to you, sir. You had an awesome day. You were the first 100-yard receiver in Mac Jones's career. You showed us why they paid you $11.5 million a year. Was it two off seasons ago now? And if you can maintain that, if you can be consistently pretty good like that, you are a top 40 receiver in football. And you know what? Good signing by Belichick.
Let me just piggyback on that because the play was great. Don't get me wrong.
Awesome.
Great physical play. I think maybe one of the sneaky best parts of his day was he was thrown to six times and he came away with
caught
six
all
catches.
Six. Bingo.
The efficiency there, because I've seen him be inconsistent on the practice field, be inconsistent with his hands. We know in Philly what they think in terms of the consistency.
Catch it like
of his,
Aguilar.
Catching the baby coming out a window. The fact that he was 6 for 6 and is averaging 15 yards a catch, which is where you want him to be.
Bingo.
I think you're 100% right. I think lightning may strike me. I think you're being a little overly optimistic that after all of last year, and on the second game of his second season.
I'm just saying, like, people, especially Kyrie Thompson, were kind of pumping up Nelson Agholor's tires a little bit in the preseason. And that's why this game kind of, not, I won't say ultimately validates, but begins to validate those people that were pumping him up a little bit. And if that continues, if that progresses in this same direction, now I'm not telling him he has to have a 100-yard game every day or every week, but he has to be productive and he has to consistently be there and be present. And if that continues throughout the season, he could end up being worth the money.
It balances out Jacoby Myers, who is your possession guy, and you just wish you had something more than a possession guy. And if Aguilar can be that, that'd be huge for the offense. One game in, we'll see if they can do it twice. Do I hear two?
Jacoby Myers goes 9 for 13 for 95. It would have been glorious if they had 200-yard receivers, but I'll balance it out by this. Devontae Parker still with catch
We're in the negative.
I'm not done.
Oh. That sounded negative.
Blankheads.
I'm excited for the negatives, so just wait.
Okay, no, of course you are. You're like, oh, help. Shime's getting hungry. Elf needs food badly. No. If Devontae Parker still only having a catch on the season means that the attention drawn to him allows Aguilar to feed or opens up a little more space for Myers for these guys to be able to make third down catches or go long and maybe take it to the 6-point house, then I don't see his lack of production so far as a negative. In fact, I'm fine with it. See, I spun the negative into a positive. How about that shit?
Whoa. Unnecessary potty mouth. All right, what's your positive, Fitzy?
I just gave you my positive. I piggybacked off of you, the offensive line, and especially the powerful running game. No.
Your own opinions. Okay.
Yes.
Stealing my crap. Anyway, so I guess that means we're going to go quickly. Actually, before I move on to the negatives, and I'm sorry that I false started you there, Shime. I know
you're good.
No, I'm negative direction.
I have it in the holster. I'm ready to go.
The
everyone
Parker
can't wait to hear it.
Is fascinating to me that we saw Xavien Howard week one. There was a pick, and I know he wasn't covering him, but a pick to Minka Fitzpatrick, their best defensive back week two. So I don't really know what other teams are looking at, because I look at Devontae Parker, who played with Jalen Waddle last year and Mike Gesicki, and Jalen Waddle caught 105 balls as one of the fastest players in the NFL. Even getting the coverage he got last year, Devontae Parker had less separation than any receiver in football for the second straight season. I don't really understand why opponents are seemingly treating him like he's a number one receiver.
You're peeing on my negative here, Andy.
This is more about the opponents. Like, I agree with you, Fitzy. If they're going to treat him like a number one and give him attention,
fine, do it.
Fine, do it, but why are you so dumb would be my question. Like, I don't really
So far on this season, just for your eggs and benefit right here, Nelson Aguilar is actually above the league average in terms of yards of separation, and Jacoby Myers is like right at the league average. Kendrick Bourne hasn't really had enough plays to qualify, and Devontae Parker, I think, is at an all-time career low for himself in terms of yards of separation per play.
And he's the worst in the NFL entirety for the last 2 years, and he's already on pace for a career low. Awesome. Now,
but
that's
transition
into negativity.
So because we're on him, can I go first in the negative comment? That way it won't be as bad as we go through.
But Sean, do you think if I went to the ice cream parlor and I knew how hungry you were, do you think I would deny you being first scoop in the line? Of course not.
Yes, you
would. Okay,
Sean,
what do you got?
Kid.
Get negative. It's what
you
do.
No. So here's my thing. I think Bill Belichick could be setting Mac Jones back for the long term. And that's specifically because he brought in Devontae Parker and is insisting on throwing 50-50 balls, which is the lamest thing in football, the stupidest thing in football, in my opinion. And his offensive play calling has been quite possibly the most vanilla offensive play calling in the history of the sport. And I'm talking within the history of the sport. The wing T was more creative than whatever Matt Patricia has dialed up. So, and specifically because the trap that is Devontae Parker is that he claims he wins 80-20 of the 50-50 balls. No. He wins 20% of the 50-50 balls. We've seen Mac Jones throw up two of them that have gotten picked. I understand one of them was a penalty, whatever. It didn't end up getting called, blah, blah, blah. Still ended up as a pick. And another 50-50 ball that got batted in the air. And if there was any other safeties around, it would have also been a pick. So he's being lulled into or told to throw these balls to Devontae Parker, who can't get any separation and stinks. And instead of using guys like Kendrick Bourne, who can get separation and make plays when they're on the field. So ultimately, I don't blame Mac Jones. I blame the coach. I blame the guy in charge and the guy who's bringing in the personnel. And therefore, I believe Bill Belichick is negatively setting back Mac Jones for the future.
The regression that Christian Fourier predicted, I think,
is not Mac Jones's fault.
Okay, so I think mine is similar, so I'm just going to leap off of yours. I know it's only 2 weeks into the season, but I don't feel like it's that, because a lot of us were predicting and projecting this for months and months and months, so it doesn't feel like it's that early in the process here. to steal their word, the process. I think we just need to accept this offense is not going to be potent, is not going to score points, cannot win shootouts, cannot trail. I think opening day was a perfect example. When the Dolphins had a lead, they knew it was over. They knew the other team couldn't come back. They didn't need to score points. They didn't need to do anything. The game was over. And this isn't to say the Patriots will not win games. They will win games. We saw them win a game on Sunday. They're 1-1.
Yep.
But the reality is when you watch the rest of, let's just say, the AFC, you're not that. You know the old Bill Belichick is playing chess while everybody else plays checkers? I feel like the rest of the offenses... Yeah, I know. Mike Irvin, he loves to use it. And then he goes,
I love it.
I feel like I'm watching the rest of the American Football Conference play chess, and the Patriots can only play checkers with Mac Jones. And this is not a specific indictment of any. I mean, I guess Bill, because Bill told us blame him. He's ultimately responsible for everything. So I guess I would blame Bill. But the reality is they don't have a good scheme. They have offensive coaches that are learning on the fly. This should have been expected. They're barely offensive coaches. And I think the biggest issue, the bottom line, for those of us that were saying trade up for Jameson Williams, you're 2 years away. Go get Mac his special playmaker. Get him his Justin Jefferson. Get him his Jamar Chase. They still don't have any weapons. I love Ramondre Stevenson as much as anybody. But if he's your game-changing weapon, your best you can field, and I think he might be at this point, you're in trouble because he's not that. He is not Christian McCaffrey in his heyday or
Jonathan
or
Taylor
Tomlinson, or like he can't carry you. And the rest of the offensive weapons, I mean, hell, you got $25 million worth of tight ends that are doing nothing. Nothing. So I think we just need to accept this team as old school. You said it, Shime, you know, 80 years ago. Like, they're going to need to run the ball. They're going to need to get turnovers. They're going to need to get special teams plays. They're going to need to get breaks. That's just the reality, because in a league where some teams can decide, I'm going to score. Some teams can score 24 points in a quarter, 21 points in a quarter. The Patriots cannot. You are not that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, the rest of the AFC may seem like they're actually playing chess in virtual reality or the metaverse, and the Patriots at times with this offense are playing checkers. But it's like one of those little tiny magnetic ones you bring on a road trip and the kids try to play in the backseat, and then the pieces end up all over the floor. Like, it's not that impressive. However, when you say that they lack playmakers in general, I still think Ramondre Stevenson has more than he's shown us over these two games. We're almost diminishing now after paying tribute to, or at least propping up, Nelson Agholor for making a great play last Sunday, the fact that he can be a playmaker at times. And while I'm not going to compare the Patriots receiving core or tight end room to any of the best ones in the AFC, let alone what Miami was able to pull off on Sunday. Yeah. Fact is, I had the exact same biggest weakness. I wrote it right here on the old Six Rings notepad, falling behind by two touchdowns or more. Last Sunday, we saw everybody, including the Atlanta Falcons, who, side note, were down 28-3 and almost came back. They were a mistimed 40-yard touchdown pass away that Ramsey mossed over a receiver from coming back themselves. You had Oakland up, excuse me, there it is, Vegas. They are up 20 points. They end up losing that game. It was, what, 35-7 or 35-14 at one point between Baltimore and Miami?
35-14. And
Miami storms back. With Tua, side note for any of the listeners, go search out on Twitter the video where a guy took basically did the mirror image flip and had Tua look like a right-hand passer, and all of a sudden, he looks confident, poised, and rocket-armed. I don't know what it is about his weird left-arm action. It doesn't look the same, but that was a really fun watch. And then, of course, you've got Buffalo throwing an easy 40 spot up on a Monday night. Yeah, Andy, they're not going to be able to do that. So the Patriots are going to be, until they show us otherwise, a front-running, old-school team that's going to play grind-it-out football. And that's just the bottom line. Like, to ask them to be something that they're not, while it's fun to experiment or step out of your comfort zone at times, it's not going to be what you're going to see this year. Not until they get more explosive players, and not until they add a tight end who doesn't run either with plodding abandon like Hunter Henry does at times, or just get in the way of success like Jonnu Smith. Oh, that poor guy. It's just never going to work. What should we do? What really should we do with Jonnu Smith at this point?
Exile.
Throw him in Boston Harbor like he's a crate of tea.
Poor man.
Send him down the Cape. Have him enjoy some treehouse brewing down the Cape and just let him live his life.
Oh, it's not going to happen. We just keep trying to make it happen. It's just not going to happen.
I saw Elba.
It's funny because Nick Caley held a conference call this week as the rotational offensive voice in their assistant calls. And he talked about how hard Jonnu Smith works and how great he is to work with and everything he does behind the scenes. And I believe it. Like, I don't think he's just trying to fluff him up because he knows the guy's not having a lot of success. But the reality is, like, those are the comments you expect to get out of, I don't know, former practice squad defensive end turned fullback like James Devlin, right? Like, these stories that are arcing upward from nowhere, not your $12.5 million a year highest paid tight end when, oh yeah, he works really hard behind the scenes. Guess what? No one cares. No one cares how hard he works behind the scenes. He makes $12 million to work hard in front of the scenes, right? As the scene. And I'm with you guys. It's never going to work. And sadly, he is supposed to be. And I would say another one is Tyquan Thornton. And I know, Fitzy, you're really down on the pick and you make fun of his body and all that. But the reality is he had a good summer. He runs a 4.2. Mm-hmm. He might have been a guy that could have flashed for you over the first couple games, right? He one play here, one play there, and we're not going to see him for, you know, another month plus.
Well, we'll see. So we're heading into week 3 right now. Being on IR means he has to miss at least the first 4 games. Do we have any sort of update as to his healing process? Because it was always about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on player's ability to heal once he took the ding.
Yeah, now, I'd be stunned if we see him before late October. I mean, we're still a month away. It was,
yeah,
you know, 8 week.
Maybe the Bears game that Monday night could be a target, something like that. That would be about 2.5 months.
Not to play your side of the street, but, you know, a guy from a fractured bone coming back who you think maybe frail or limited.
Brittle, yes.
Yeah, in his ability to take hits, I think you're going to err on the side of caution. I mean, hell, a guy that we all think was as tough as steel learned that lesson in Rob Gronkowski when he came back too quickly from the broken forearm. So I think with this player, this body type, this injury, they will err on the side of caution more than anything else. But it's unfortunate because he's a potential. I'm not putting it on him like, oh, he needs to come in and be an all-pro receiver. But Tyquan Thornton's a guy that could be a potential playmaker, individual plays in for this team, and you're going to have to wait a while to see him.
Well, hopefully when he comes back, he's healthy enough that they don't rush him back. It's not a compromised or a managed workload that he has to take on. We'll see. But yeah, I would put since I'm always one to love an over-under or a marker, side note, if anyone had bet the over-under on number of snaps Kendrick Bourne got last Sunday, if you're like your boy, you took the
right.
Over.
Good job.
22 plays when I said 16.5 still counts.
I don't think you could actually bet it. The number.
If
do you have an app where I can put bets in with you? Do you
believe it or not? I was approached by an offshore gambling account, and their pitch to me in trying to do an influencer deal was, we'll give you the latitude to create a prop or two every week if you want to, and then you can share it with followers and your audience. I absolutely would have done that last week, and I would have cashed in. Wouldn't that have just been glorious?
I feel like that would have gone disastrous at some point.
Well, I didn't, son of a bitch, but it was still a pretty good call. That said, I'm calling the Bears game for the legend of Tal Reek, as some call him, Tyquan Thornton. Okay,
so
back for the
I can't wait to play the Bears. That'd be one game. That's one game that I'm going to pick the Patriots to win by like 20.
Bears are super ungood.
Yeah, they're bad. Good,
but they don't have enough of those on their schedule because, you know,
I'm trying to inject some positivity.
No, actually, here's the thing. I don't want a bunch of Bears games because that's just going to lull people into a false sense of security or make people think the Patriots can do more than they're capable of. I'm here for
you
the learning
like last
curve.
Season?
I'm here for the growth.
They're trending down the exact same track as last
Well, season. Maybe they can actually take a few more, little Dr. Leo Marvin here. Maybe some baby steps toward progress as some of the new tent pole pieces grow.
So I we were kind of similar in both our pros and con takeaways. So I wanted to just circle back around a little bit on that and maybe talk about other areas that you considered, I considered, we all considered for those categories, because I don't think we mentioned, and it deserves mentioning, the defense. And I think the defense has been pretty good through the first couple weeks. The defensive front, I think, has been flat out good. I think Judon and Wise, Barmore showed up this week. I think the defensive front led by those guys has been good. And the back end has been good enough, has tackled. Now, they're going to get tested more. There's no doubt about that. The tests are coming. But, you know, I'm also a believer. You can only kind of face the challenge that's put ahead of you. Yep. And this is the question I brought up like this first week of training camp. Like, maybe this defense, even though they lost J.C. Jackson, their best player and the number one cornerback to build around, maybe they can still be good enough to be competitive. Because I do, Shime, feel like they're going down the last year road, and the defense was a big part of that. Like, the defense was good enough against mediocre opponents, and then when it faced real offenses, it couldn't measure up.
Yeah, it's the boogeyman 2.0, dude.
I think this defense is pretty good. Like, I think, like, if you were to just take this defense as a group away from the Patriots and put it with an offense like Baltimore or like Kansas City or like the Chargers, like, I think that's a winning team. I think this can be a winning defense. But as you said, I think they will be tested, or especially over the next couple weeks, right? You get Lamar Jackson coming into your building next week. The week after, you go to Lambeau and you face Green Bay, who is basically a two-headed running back machine and with very young receivers. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how you play against those teams. And you're going to get Buffalo twice this year.
I want the Green Bay challenge, though. I'm glad you highlighted that, Shime, because I think they'll play better than some people expect against the Ravens this coming Sunday. We'll save all of that for the Six Rings preview in a couple days. But I really think that the Green Bay game, with the different approach that they're taking to offense this year, highlighting the two backs and the receivers almost as an afterthought in an Aaron Rodgers offense, followed by the Lions, who are going to be no pushover and no easy task for any team, let alone the Patriots, in week 5 at home at Gillette. Like, that's going to be fascinating to me, because the Lions actually look like they look swift, precise, and sometimes impressive on offense so far.
Yeah, you might lose a kneecap in that game. But, like, it's like, I think overall, I would give this defense like a solid B, leaning even to B plus. Like, agreed. That's kind of where I think they are. And I think that's a good spot to be in right now, because I think you can still improve, but you could also still get worse. So you need to make sure you don't do that and that you continue to improve.
And you have guys like Mack Wilson making that incredibly athletic play, which led to Jalen Mills' first interception as a Patriot on Sunday. Matthew Judon is tied for, I think, third in quarterback hits so far. So whether it's the way they're scheming it up, his early season energy, who they've played, whatever the combination is, he's actually getting his job done as well. And Sunday, oh boy, you got the Matthew Judon reunion game as well. Like, if there's a game you would think you'd need him, it would be Sunday against the Ravens. And how in the world they get any sleep this week trying to figure out some sort of corral and contain defense for LaMarvelous, that's why they get paid the big bucks, and we do the podcast talking about them.
So did you guys have any other, Shime, I hesitate to even ask you, but any other positives?
I'm being pretty level-headed today.
Okay. Any other positives you take out of the Steelers win?
Yeah, how about the cornerbacks? The cornerbacks, like, as we're talking love on the defense, I think the cornerbacks have been a little bit better than advertised.
I just don't think they've been challenged yet, right? Like, I mean,
what do you mean they faced Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and Deontay
and Tua
Johnson
played like dog doo doo in week one, and then they faced Mitch Trubisky. Like, I think if that's not Mitch Trubisky throwing the football, Deontay Johnson probably carves you up a lot worse than it looked. And I think the same thing with Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill still had 9 catches for 84 yards. It's like, did you contain him? Sure, but Tua also looked like crap, and they knew you couldn't score, so they weren't like they weren't in desperation mode like they were against Baltimore. So they weren't just hurling it. And so I think the defense right now, at least the cornerbacks, are in a spot where they're not making massive mistakes, but they're just also I don't think they're going to be talented enough to keep up with some of the talent they're going to face as the season goes on.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, yeah, so we'll see who can handle Amon St. Ra. That challenge comes in a few weeks.
Amon Ra St. Ra, the sun god, is
he's on a tear that I can't remember a wide receiver going on right now.
Well, it's the best in history. I mean,
there's three receivers who have done what he's done. Over the last 8 games, he's had 8+ receptions in each game. There's only 3 receivers on that list who have done that. It's him, Antonio Brown, and Michael Thomas. That's it. That's the list.
But when you add in touchdowns,
I believe it's him and Antonio Brown, and that's it.
Yeah, he's doing historic things with, yes, we do need to mention, with
Jared Goff.
Jared Goff, because I am a Jared Goff hater. I think the guy stinks. Ever since he took that fake sack in the Super Bowl when Kyle Van Noy buzzed his tower and he fell to his knees like a little bitch, I was done with him. But he's throwing the ball to this record-setting receiver.
So he's like a jugs machine. He's not going to move around that well. He's not that. He may even have the intelligence of a jugs machine.
But
a jugs machine can make the throws, and that's all he needs to do.
Doing the job. Another positive I wanted to touch on, because I'm kind of actually on Shime's side here with the corners. Like, I'm interested to see where that goes. But I think there's been a development that you saw the evolution of Jabril Peppers. I thought he had a couple plays on Sunday, big hits, like where he was active. You needed it, actually, because Kyle Duggar was actually out with an injury at the time. Mm-hmm. Jabril Peppers, we've talked about the safety depth and that has to be sort of the core of the back end. As he evolves here with Adrian Phillips, who looks like you kind of avoided a scare there with that injury from week 1. He was back out there in week 2. But I think Jabril Peppers feels like he's picking up momentum. And I don't know whether it's physical, that he's hitting his stride physically coming off the knee injury, or he's just getting comfortable in the defense. But I think Jabril Peppers is going to be a playmaker for this back end.
Yes, and a small critique, if I may, and I think we can all agree with this. It is time to end the Miles Bryant experiment, not in the secondary, because he's actually done decent work as a slot corner. No. It is time to end Miles Bryant punt returner. Let us get Marcus Jones back there. Let's get him active.
We need only
somebody who doesn't catch the ball going backwards at the 3, fumble it into the end zone, and give the other team 1, 2, 3 opportunities to recover it in the end zone for 7, and not pull an Olszewski, if you will. Oh, Gunner, we feel for the
quick side note.
I would like the dynamic approach. We need some dynamic. We've been talking about playmakers. Marcus Jones.
He's been dynamic when he had the ball. He's returned the ball well when he catches it. He just didn't catch it that time, and he made a terrible decision.
How lucky, by the way, were they?
According to Cam Accord, that was never going. There was really no point where that was ever going to be a touchdown. The impetus of the ball carried itself into the end zone. So even on the muff, if the Steelers recover, it's still just a touchback. As long as Miles Bryant doesn't bat it out the back of the end zone, that's a penalty and a safety, or pick it up, get possession, run around again, and then fumble a second time. So even though our hearts kind of dropped a couple times,
but
I don't
believe If he
still wasn't a great play, though.
If he had muffed it off the face and it came into the field of play, though, and the Steelers recover it, they get it at the 1 yard line or wherever they recover it. Correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the muff momentum, muff momentum.
Yes,
we all love muff momentum in our lives. The muff momentum carried it into the end zone, so therefore it would have been a touchback.
Correct. But as he's running backwards, he's still in the field of play. If he had kicked that into the field of play or something like that, there were more ways that it also could have gone bad or worse. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like, Cam Accord's trying to put a band-aid on it, but like there were also more ways that it could have also gone worse, not just alternate ways where it could be okay.
Easiest way to make sure that we prevent that is just take him out. Play Marcus Jones. That's
bingo.
It.
Or he can just not run that far backwards over his shoulder and try to make a stupid play.
Also true. Just fair catch and let it bounce.
Or just let it bounce.
Just get the hell away from there. Poison. Poison. Everybody get the hell away from it, including me. But yes, the bigger picture, Marcus Jones, you drafted a third round, two-time All-American returner who I know it's different from college to pros, but he's experienced. He knows what he's doing.
It's not that different. The return game is the return game.
No, it's like a ball in the air. Catch it.
Once he catches it, it all comes down to athleticism and vision, and that's it.
I think you'll see him this week, would be my guess.
I agree. I think you need more dynamics. You need explosive plays. Miles Bryant, probably not going to provide them. Although, nice little return on Sunday for Kyle Duggar. It's one of the top kickoff returns in the NFL to the date.
So the one other thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap up this Victory Week edition of the Six Rings podcast was something that I know a lot of people, Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, and others have been kind of harping on, fixating on, extrapolating from, was some changes to the Patriots sideline. They really fixated on Bill Belichick being very active with the offensive players, the offensive coaches, Mac Jones, basically turning his back on the defense and letting the defense, Steve Belichick, Gerard Mayo, and those guys do their thing. I know there were some other changes. Billy Yates was on the field in the first half. He had been in the press box in the first half. That maybe allowed Matt Patricia to maybe be a little more involved with the quarterback skill position player adjustments, talking with Bill. What do you make of maybe Bill taking a more hands-on approach in week two and as we evolve here? Is that just the natural course of things, or is that a early season panic type move?
No, I think that was to be expected. I mean, we kind of talked about it that at some point he would probably step in and assist more with the offense because, again, Matt Patricia hasn't done this before. So I don't necessarily think that it is by any means the panic button. I think the panic button is when you see Belichick with the play sheet calling plays. That, to me, is the panic button, which we haven't gotten to yet. Nope. We're not there. That is not what happened. This was him just conferring with the offense a lot more and a lot more frequently, which I think is fine. He knows that his defense is in better hands right now than his offense, and so he needs to help his offense. And I think that as the head coach of the football team is the responsible thing to do.
This is his design, his want, his wish. He brought them in, so he best be there to shepherd and supervise as they learn on the fly, on the job. And I think it was probably Matt Patricia who was calling a lot of those plays late game, which ended up working out. Conservative as the drive may have been, that 4 to 6 minute offense at the end closed out things nicely for the Patriots. I do not see Bill Belichick having his hand not just in the offensive cookie jar, but elbow deep in it at times to be a positive, because then again, like I said, this is his design and his idea.
Right. And his responsibility. So when it goes well, I guess we praise him. And when it goes poorly, we blame him. He at least told us that much, right? Blame him if this doesn't work. But for 1 week, it worked. They got a victory. They got some help from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Certainly, old friend or plant or whatever you want to call him, Gunnar Olszewski, gave you a muffed punt to give Damian Harris an easy touchdown. And they got the big play this week at the end of the half on a play so impressive that even Chris Scheim liked it. Like, I think we need to note that for a minute. A play so impressive that I believe what Chris Scheim said at the beginning of the podcast was, Nelson Aguilar is worth the contract they gave him. That's how impressive that play was.
I said he could be. Let's just add a little air of negativity to that, because I think that's too positive. Bad throw by Mac Jones, amazing play by Nelson Aguilar.
Yeah, I specifically stayed away from Mac Jones as we wrap this up because I didn't want to go down a road of negativity, but I think it's quite clear. Mac Jones is probably not off to the start of the year that he'd like to have, even though the record is 1-1, and I'm sure he took a little sigh of relief coming to the podium after a victory rather than skipping the podium while he was getting x-rays, as was the case a week earlier. But I think we're going to leave our assessments of Mac Jones, Scheim, for the coming weeks. We'll see. Give him a month. Give him six weeks. The new offense, see where it goes.
To be fair, when I was giving my negative, I said a lot of this isn't his fault. So I agree with you. I think his evaluation should wait till week four, week five, week six.
Yeah, he didn't exactly look great. Didn't look great, though, when he on the one replay that kind of circulated Monday night around the interwebs where little Jordan Humphrey came not just very kind of, but super incredibly open on a play, and Mac stared down Jacoby. Some people said he probably couldn't see him from the pocket that was slowly collapsing. I just think Mac is locking onto his guys or his comfort blankets a little too much, and he's going to have to wait things out and trust both process and pocket in order for the Patriots to be a little more explosive going forward. Tis a learning curve indeed.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a reason the Patriots are last in EPA per play on early downs right now. And that's, but again, there is some room for, I'm trying to be level-headed today and not be super Mr. Negative Cloud. There is some room for an opportunity for growth here. I have more faith in Mac Jones to fix himself and get him back to kind of where he was going than I do in the play calling of Matt Patricia. So to Mac's credit, I think he deserves a little bit more leeway when it comes to being like, oh man, he stinks this year.
100%. And I'll just for the little Jordan Humphrey play, I've seen Tom Brady do that. I've seen Peyton Manning do that. Quarterbacks miss wide open receivers, even the greatest of the great. My one concern as we move forward is watching Mac's accuracy. I don't think he's been accurate enough, and I think the interception of Minkah Fitzpatrick was an inaccurate throw.
I mean, look at this throw to Cam Sutton that didn't end up being an interception.
Well, that was horrific.
That was very accurate.
He hit Pittsburgh right between the numbers.
A buddy texted me and was like, why is he making that throw? Like, he needs to set himself. I go, trust me. I think there's a lot of quarterbacks in football, Mac included, and this is a bigger group than just him, that need to stop rolling left and throwing. There's only like four guys in football that can make that throw. One in particular that can definitely make that throw, and Patrick Mahomes, because he's a freak. And then maybe a couple other guys that can relatively consistently Josh make Allen. That throw. Yeah, those guys who are good at the sidearm shortstop angles, guys like Mac, guys like Russell Wilson, there's a large group of them that are not good rolling left, and we kind of need to try and deter that as much as possible, because those mistakes lead to bad decisions.
And since Sunday was so wild and so many teams that we thought were going to win that we have tagged as potential playoff stalwarts, shoe-ins, or juggernauts took some L's, including the Cincinnati Bengals, and what a brutal loss that was with their terrible offensive line play, which it shouldn't be, because they spent all that money getting two coveted guards and a high-priced tackle in the offseason. A win on Sunday for the Patriots, and it could potentially be a different conversation, and maybe the growth curve will accelerate a little bit more for the positive. But again, we'll save that for the preview pod.
That is what's up next on the Six Rings podcast feed. Later this week, we will look at the challenge that is Lamar Jackson and Rashad Bateman, John Harbaugh, the rest of the Ravens, which, as we know, has been a great rivalry with some very fun games over the year. And it's also the home opener at Gillette Stadium. And what a home opener it is to welcome Lamar Jackson to town. But that's our podcast later in the week. Today, we recapped, relived, and brought some positives that maybe will lead to more positives in the future from the Patriots 17-14 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. For Nick Fitzy Stevens and Chris Scheim time. He was actually positive for a little bit this week. Scheim, I'm Andy Hart. That puts the wraps on a Six Rings pod. You want to get in touch at Six Rings Pod on Twitter or email us sixringspod@gmail.com. See you.
Bye. Yeah.